Well, welcome to the latest Sentinel Delilah podcast. And with me across the table, I have two gentlemen, two very familiar gentlemen, very popular. Lou Macari, one of the most popular and successful of Stoke City managers. Welcome, Lou.
Thanks, Martin.
And to your right, my left, is Sir Neil Baldwin. He's nodding. It won't be long, will it? It won't be long, Neil. You hope not.
And he's got a biscuit in his mouth as we speak.
Yeah, he's chewing a biscuit. We've got a box of biscuits to keep him going. Hopefully he'll chew those between answers. But welcome, gentlemen. We're going to talk, obviously, about the 1990s and then jump forward to Marvellous, that great play about Neil's life. Lou, first of all, what impact has Nello Neil had on your life?
Well, one I never thought would happen, to be honest with you, Martin, because once you're a footballer and you've played your football and you move into management and then you move out of management, that's your sort of life in the public eye, over and done with and gone. Sometimes you're delighted that that's the case, other times a little bit sad, but because of Neil and because of Marvellous, right out of the blue, we sort of, how's the best way to put it, Neil, we sort of came to prominence again.
Yeah.
Because of a film. And never did I believe that the film would be on television, never did I believe it would get an award, and never did I believe it would make the impact that it has made on lots of people. Not just talking about people in Stoke and Trent, but you know, all over the country when I go different places and do some dinners, and people always talk to me about Marvellous. How did it happen? How did you meet Neil? Same questions as you're going to ask me.
It was madness, was it, Neil? Could you have imagined the fame you've had second time round because of this play?
Well, I think it's been a great achievement, and it's been great knowing Lou as Stoke manager.
How good was Lou as a manager?
Very good.
The best?
I would say.
Not far.
In my time, yeah.
That's because I was the only manager you ever had.
No,
what funny one?
Joe Jordan.
Joe Jordan, funny? Are you kidding me?
With no teeth in there. But I said to Kevin Shout, Bummer, when I saw him on Saturday, I said, after you did your leg in, I was getting it. Joe Jordan.
Oh, of course.
I better not.
Joe Jordan broke Kevin Sheldon's leg. Yeah, as Joe Jordan was reminded on the day he joined Stoke as manager, not by me. Well, let's turn it right back, Lou, to when you first met Nello. If I remember rightly, you hadn't been at the club long. We go in 1991. And there were a group of fans outside, weren't there?
Yeah, Neil was one of them. And as the film shows you, there's a number out there, and 6 or 7 hours later when I come out, they'd all gone, quite rightly so, because it was pouring the rain, and Neil was still there, and I thought, who's this guy and why is he still here? And he was just there to sort of welcome me into the job and wish me all the best. So I get into conversation with him, asked him what he did, and he said he was unemployed, and I said, well, what did you do? And he said, I used to be a circus clown, and I didn't laugh, but I was chuckling.
You didn't believe him?
No, I just thought, well, I've never heard of a circus clown getting the sack, unemployed, because he's had a dispute with somebody. So I just, and then the more I talked to him, the more I just got a feeling about Neil. I'd never met him before, I'd never seen him before, but you get a feel about people, and I just thought, I think as an ex-circus clown, he could be useful in the dressing room. And then I said to him, who does he support? And he says, oh, I'm Stoke City fanatic, because he could have been Port Vale, so I wanted to make sure of that.
No chance of that, Neil.
And after chatting to him, I said to him, would you like a job at Stoke? Because I knew I didn't have to sort of run a position of kit man past the chairman or anything, and I knew he would... which he did do throughout my time at Stoke, give me more or less a free hand to do what I wanted without reporting back to him every day. And I said, would you like a job with me at Stoke? And he said, well, as I said, kit man. And he said, yeah, brilliant. I said, right, you start on Monday, 9 o'clock, come and see me in the office and we'll crack on from there. He turned up at 9 o'clock, we went to the costume shop up in Hanley, got a chicken outfit on him. And I thought,
what, straight away?
Yeah, right away. This is how I'm going to do it.
What did you think of that meal?
Very nice. I had it on all day at Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Oh, later on. Did you wonder what you'd let yourself in for?
Not really, no.
He was an entertainer, wasn't he? He entertained, so I thought he can entertain the lads we've got, and, you know, when the times come along...
This was the serious point to it, wasn't it?
This was the serious point. Yeah. When the times come along where results don't go your way and everyone's a bit down, my man here would lift them. So I got the outfit on, and players in the dressing room, and I said, want to introduce a new kit man to you lads, and I brought him in with his chicken outfit on, and I won't repeat what was said, but you can imagine we're a bunch of footballers, and that was him. He was up and running, and from that day on, I think it's fair to say that they got on great with him, and he was a success.
But they bought into it?
Yes, without a doubt.
Eventually?
They bought into it the first day when you started ordering you around and telling you get them this and get them that. And once they found out he was a circus clown, it was, you can imagine what it was like.
But they must have wound you up a bit, Neil, some of them.
They did, but we got on it.
It was all good humoured.
And beast them.
What about?
Who wound you up the most?
Big Ed.
Who?
Foley.
Oh, Steve Foley, yeah.
What did he do?
Trim our shoes off a bus one.
Oh, yeah. We went to... He just reminded me of lots of stories. We went to Africa, believe it or not, and on the bus going to the hotel, Steve Foley going through this village, which was like you would imagine a village in Africa. Steve Foley threw one of his shoes out the window, and there was a scramble for that shoe. So some kid in Africa who's now grown up,
with one shoe,
it's got Neil Baldwin's shoe. Little does he know that it wasn't just the Neil Baldwin that was a Stoke kit manager at the time. It's now Neil Baldwin, the film star.
That shoe would be worth something. Yeah,
I'm it
was in Tanzania everywhere.
Yeah, I remember you going on that trip. How did you get Neil into the country?
No, got a good passport.
Yeah.
But the away days, you must have loved those. The away days.
Yeah.
And obviously not Africa every week, but
nobody,
you
get
some great trips. Yeah. And you really felt part of the team.
Yeah.
Bournemouth was good, Neil, wasn't it, pre-season?
Oh, yeah.
What happened at Bournemouth, Neil?
I had a chicken outfit on.
Was it not a Ninja Turtle? I think you did not have a Ninja Turtle on that day.
No, not for me.
All right, sorry, excuse me. He should know. Right, and you got on the bus at Stoke, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think, it's fair to say, about 4 hours later, when we arrived at Bournemouth, he still had the chicken outfit on, or a turtle, ninja turtle.
The chicken was alright.
I took the head off him, and just as well I did, because his face was starting to go blue. Had it been on any longer, we may have lost our kit manager, yeah.
Mm.
You couldn't have gone 4 hours without eating, though. How did you eat with that suit on?
When we had old tongue.
Yeah. Made up for it.
Food.
Who were your favourite players around that time, Neil? There were some great players for Stoke, weren't there?
Yeah.
Who were the ones you really got on well with?
Overson, yeah.
Vince Overson.
Prudhomme.
Yeah, goalkeeper.
More than La Pima.
Steely was one of your favourite, wasn't he?
Yeah,
little Mark.
Stimmers.
Yeah.
Well, I could say.
Higgins he liked.
Yeah. Yeah, and you still keep in touch with him, don't you? You see a lot of them.
And Sanford.
Yeah, Lee Sanford.
Sometimes.
We are trying to plan a night out with me and Neil with all the ex-players we had.
Yeah.
Just to bring everyone back and...
Yeah.
What, on stage you mean?
No, just in Stoke or somewhere and...
Right.
And treat them to a night out and you won't have to wear any outfit, so...
You should get on stage though, especially if you get some of the lads back.
Yeah.
Relive the memories. What for you, Lou, were the great memories of that time? Promotion, obviously.
Best memory for me, Martin, was because it was funny as well. The night we played Manchester United at the Victoria Ground in the League Cup, I think it was called at the time.
Yeah.
Manchester United were in town, obviously. Sir Alex, the manager, a manager who never likes to lose a football match. And it was back in the days where people didn't change their teams around, although you hoped that they would do when it was Manchester United. And of course for me, being an ex-Manchester United player, I'm now the Stoke manager, and I'm desperate to win the game because it's against probably the best manager this country has ever seen. I don't think there's very many people who could disagree with that, what his record is and what he did over his career, not just in England but in Scotland as well with Aberdeen. So Manchester United in town, and it's the first leg of a two-legged affair. We want to get a good result, but I'm well aware that, you know, the gap between the two sides is huge, and we're probably not going to get the result that we want, especially if they play a full-strength side.
Start with two divisions below at that.
Well, we have two divisions below, yeah, and team bus arrives, and you always knew the opposition team bus, that says that you always knew when they arrived at the ground, because it was right next to where my office was, and you could hear all the Stoke fans shouting various things to them, like, I won't repeat but you can imagine what it was like, and gave them that that welcome, I think, that was famous at the Victoria Ground. Neil here, who loves a celebrity, was desperate to meet Sir Alex, and I was desperate that he didn't meet Sir Alex, because Alex, being the total professional that he is and plots and plans everything to perfection, I didn't want Neil barging into the United dressing room, you know, during the team talk or anything like that.
Dressed as a chicken.
Just as a chicken. And give him an excuse to maybe have a go at us full-time if we managed to win the game. But an hour from kick-off, when the team sheets are exchanged, I got the United team and I looked at it, and it was just as usual. Schmeichel, Dennis Irwin, Gary Pallister, Brian Robson, Mark Hughes, Brian McClair. And I thought, oh, he hasn't left anybody out that I would like him to have left out. Obviously, Sparky, Brian McClair and Mark Hughes, two prolific goal scorers. And, you know, when you're a team two divisions down, you don't want to be playing against them. You're hoping there's an apprentice playing or some young kid that we've never heard of who's making his way in the game. But they two were up front. So I jokingly, and it was a joke, I jokingly said to Neil, look at that team, Neil. We've no chance. You may as well take the team talk. So before I knew it, he's got all the players round him in the dressing room. And I won't go through what he said, but he said some very uncomplimentary things about the Manchester United team, didn't you? And so then the bell goes I think it was 7:30 kickoff back in those days, normal times. The bell goes at 7:25 and teams are lined up, our team's lined up. And I said to Neil, final word, Neil, and he said, win.
Short and sweet.
So out they went, nothing fancy. So out they went, and of course, I don't need to remind Stoke fans, little Steenie scored two fantastic goals. Right. And when you can beat Schmeichel the way he did, I think that proves of fantastic goals. Victoria Ground erupted, and getting close to the end, Matt, I remember it, looking at my watch, looking at the referee, asking my assistants how long do they think there is to go. And of course, the final whistle went, and we all jumped up with joy and realised what a great result we had. It ended up 2-1, first leg. But I forgot about this man. I forgot about him, who's always sat in the back behind me, and I completely forgot about him. And the next thing, I look down the track and I see him shaking Sir Alex's hand. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope he doesn't say anything wrong. And I hope he's not said anything, because Alex, I wouldn't say he was raging, but he doesn't like to lose, and he would have been very, very unhappy. So after the game, he comes into my office, and I'm in the office, and right out of the blue, he says to me, who was the big guy that came on the track to me? And I was cringing, I was thinking, oh no. I said, why is that, boss? And I always called him boss, even though he was never my boss. Why is that, boss? He said, because, I said, what did he say to you? He said, welcome to Stoke. And I said, oh.
It was a bit late for that.
But yeah, this is after, you know, Man United have just lost and we've won. He's raging. And I said, oh, don't bother, you know, forget about me. He just wanted to meet you. He said, who is he anyway? I said, he's our kit man. I said, he used to be a circus clown. and I won't repeat what Sir Alex said. Right. And then I told him, that there's even worse news for you, boss. I said, he did the team talk. He said, don't be telling anybody that, it could harm my reputation. So that for me was our best night, when I say everybody's best night, connected with Stoke at the Victoria Ground. Certainly mine and certainly Neil's.
You remember that one fondly, Neil? Mm-hmm. Now, another game you remember fondly, testimonial game at Villa Park. I think it was for Gordon Cowans.
It was Gordon Cowans, yeah.
1990, whatever it was.
Three.
Now, you were kit man that day. Had you got any inkling whatsoever that Lou might just shove you on the pitch in the last 5 or 10 minutes?
I know he said you were having me on.
Did you believe him?
Mm.
Yeah. So was he stripped in kit ready to go?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what happened when the call came, Neil?
Went on.
It wasn't as simple as that, though. Was it actually to warm up?
Yeah.
And you warmed up in front of the dugout, which I then said, no, go and warm up behind the goals where all the Stoke fans were. So he went behind the goals to warm up, and they all started chanting, "We want Nello."
Well, because there were a lot of Stoke fans there, wasn't there?
Over 2,000, I think, on that night, 2,000 or 3,000. So I thought, I was going to put him on anyway. And they were all chanting, "We want Nello." So told him to get stripped probably 5 minutes earlier, because I knew he wouldn't last probably 3 minutes of the game. So, and then we got you on, didn't we?
Yeah.
On he went, and...
And it was good.
Still not sure, though, Mark, because my memory tells me he never got a kick that night. But if you look at Marvellous, it tells you he scored with this unbelievable header. Mm-hmm. So you better ask the man himself, did he score or didn't he?
Neil, what happened?
I should have scored, there was a player named Tony Kelly.
Tony Kelly, yeah, I remember.
Blackman.
Yeah.
And everybody knew what I was going to do, but he didn't know.
You were sent on to score?
Mm.
Yeah.
So what happened?
He cut it off my foot and...
Nicked the ball off.
Nicked it and made a mess of it.
You'd have scored?
Mm.
What did you say to him? Don't swear.
Don't ever speak to me again.
Oh, he did mess around, man.
Have you ever forgiven him?
Not really. Not really, because I rung him up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he said he was working, but I don't think he was. He was in bed.
Right.
The argument continued long into the night, let's say that, because what did happen was we got a corner kick, and I informed all our players to get out, I think through Cranny and Vince Olsen, and informed all the players to get out the penalty area for this corner, which was going to be rolled along the ground for Neil to control, smash it in the back of the net. But somebody forgot to tell Tony Kelly, unfortunately. And just as the ball was coming towards you, he nipped in, took it off your toes, didn't he, and smashed it wide.
And then missed, yeah.
Yeah.
And their goalkeeper was your...
Nigel Spink, yeah, good goalkeeper. And you'd have beaten him, there's no question.
I think I would.
Can you imagine the celebration, Neil?
Oh,
would you let them kiss you?
I could have done.
I think he had his goal celebration ready, though, didn't you? I think you had a goal celebration ready.
Port Vale,
I do. Oh, yeah, he scored a goal at Port Vale a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, in the charity game?
Yeah, charity game there. But he lost, and I was part of his team that night. I was his kit man. That's how times have changed, man.
Well, I know, roles reversed.
I'm now in the number two position.
Well, you had to check his diary about today, didn't you?
Yeah.
Come in here. Now, some of the get-ups, I've written a couple down here, Neil. Talk us through the chicken we've spoken about, the kilt. What's the story behind the kilt?
The kilt was a great time, because I was one of the new signings from Scotland. And it was a good laugh. And who was the chap who did it?
Ivan.
Ivan
Gaskell from the BBC.
Right. Did an interview with
him. He couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
But he was interviewing Lou, and you were just circling around in this huge
pill. It was a DVD for Stoke.
Yeah.
And I think there'd been a bit of speculation. We were maybe going to sign some Scottish player. So I thought we'd dress up a little bit and bring you on as that mystery Scottish player. And We didn't plan it. We just said, right, we're going to do this, and I'll be in the interview, and then you come round, Neil. But obviously, he played his part when he lifted the kilt off, which I didn't tell him to. I didn't tell him
he wear anything. You were wearing some pants.
He was wearing underpants. Yeah. So that worked fantastically well, and everybody was happy. And
that was typical, though, wasn't it? Of off training, obviously, when they were training, that was serious. But when they weren't, when it was downtime, that was typical of the spirit.
Oh,
mood around the place, wasn't it? You wanted to smile. And
from the minute we walked back into the dressing room after training, I think the best way I can describe it, Martin, was all hell let loose, and it was a case of people shouting at him, saying derogatory things about him, and him bouncing back, and I could hear him from my office shouting.
Voices would echo down that corridor.
Yeah, right? Voices would echo down the corridor. I could hear this banter going on. And then he'd come to me and say, hey, he just said this to me, and as he said, well, go and say the same to him, so he'd go back up. this was non-stop, this was every day, and it was great. It worked,
that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I've also got written down here, Lord Keel. We know you've got strong affiliations with Keel and the university.
Yeah,
and one day you actually were Lord Keel, weren't you?
Yeah.
Go on, tell us about that. It was an away game somewhere.
Yeah, Hartlepool.
Hartlepool away.
A lovely old tower.
Yeah.
Where Lou said, I'm Lord Baldwin of Kiel. And they gave me a cigar and everything.
And what, you dressed up?
Up in the top hat and tails. And you're right, Neil, introduced him at reception as we walked in. I said, this is Lord Baldwin of Kiel. Very special person. Make sure you look after him. Of course, when they looked at him in the top hat and tails and all that, I think that convinced them. So from the moment we arrived, he got the five-star treatment. And then at dinner at night, they came around with a cigar box. Mm. Don't think you'd ever seen a cigar box before, had you?
Oh,
you had, sorry about that. and he got the special treatment. And then the next day at Hartlepool, that special treatment continued because the supporters laid into him.
He was still dressed.
He was still dressed. Yeah. And when we came out and made our way up the track, past all the Hartlepool supporters, who would normally shout at me, which is the manager, like, shout whatever they want to shout, they were all, like, eyes were on him, top hat and tails, and couldn't believe what they were seeing, and actually took the pressure off me a little bit. I didn't get any verbal abuse.
That wasn't the ideal, Lou.
No, it wasn't, no.
Send Neil out. Now, it all ended, didn't it, Neil? Well, it ended first time when Lou went to Celtic. Were you ever tempted to take him up there, or do you think...
He
said all the Glasgow fans would
eat your life.
Eat me alive.
The Rangers supporters, I said, would eat your life. No, I didn't, because I knew he was.
This is his patch.
I know what he said about Joe, but Joe was coming in, and I knew Joe wouldn't find any fault in him because I know Joe well, and he started working under Joe, which obviously would be different to working under myself. Joe's, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Joe's a bit more serious than I am. And he worked there, and, you know, what impact he made during the time I was there, I know for a fact when I spoke to Joe that he made a similar impact during Joe's time.
So he hadn't changed when he came back for your second spell as manager? Still the same?
He can't change. He's still the same today.
And then when Lou went the second time, you must have been devastated, Neil.
I was.
Because you knew he wouldn't be back after that, wouldn't you? Mm. After the second time.
And we had Chris Kamara, isn't it?
Well, you had quite a season, didn't you? Chick Bates, Chris Kamara, Alan Durbin.
Mm.
You saw them all off.
Is Durbin still living?
He's still living, yeah. Not quite sure where.
But the great thing about him, Martin, is that he's funny and he doesn't try to be funny.
Which makes him funny.
Which makes him even funnier.
Yeah.
You know.
That's his secret, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember the day he phoned me after I'd left and after we parted company. But he phoned me up not that long ago, and I was working at Old Trafford on a match day doing the television. So obviously, as you know, you switch your phone off and only switch it back on again when the programme finishes. Mm. So I switched it off, switched it back on at the end of the programme, and this message from Neil ring me quickly. So thinking there's something possibly seriously wrong, I I rang him right away and said, what's up? He said, where are you? And I said, Manchester. He said, are you coming past my way? And I said, well, you know where I live. You know I don't actually come right past your way because of where you are, up near Keogh. He said, well, can you come past my way? I said, well, of course I can come past your way. So he said, right, bring me cod chips and mushy peas, can you? So I thought, this is how times have changed now. You know, That's all he wanted.
Yeah. For dinner.
Yeah. So I went, I put the phone down and phone rang again and he said, oh, and a Diet Coke. So that's an indication how the sort of the pendulum has swung his way now. I used to give him the orders, he now gives me the orders. But, you know, after I put the phone down, I thought, that's funny. That is funny. Neil Baldwin is now ordering me around.
He saw nothing wrong with
that. No. No, and I thought...
Probably thought you got nothing else to do.
Yeah, and I thought, well, that's great. And that's Neil. Mm-hmm. And that he had that, you know, that little bit of that charisma that he's got. And I thought he'd lost it, though, Martin. I thought he'd lost that little bit of charisma because not that long ago, go back to that team talk that night against Manchester United and the dividends we got, which is a win. Not that long ago, the manager of Congleton Town, who I know well, and he knows well, asked him to go to Congleton to do the same sort of thing, give a team talk, because his job was on the line. Mike McDonald, wasn't it?
Yeah.
His job was on the line, and this was an important FA VAS game at Congleton, so he asked Neil to go over and speak to the team. So over he went. I didn't know this at the time, but I've been told since. Over he went. Mike McDonald's job on the line. Big game for them. They lose 5-0. Mike McDonald gets a sack after the game. So I'm thinking, he's lost it. Then this Novus, this charity match a couple of weeks ago, Neil Baldwin 11 versus Novus 11, beating 4-1 there. 4-2, rather. He scored a penalty in the last minute. And I'm thinking, he's definitely lost it. But then he's recovered because he keeps telling me this, he was the last person to speak to
Mr. Corbyn.
Jeremy Corbyn in Stoke and wish him all the best. And in fairness, he was a no-hoper to start with in the election and almost pulled it off. So I think he's maybe back now. He had that little spell where it didn't work.
Yeah.
It's maybe back now.
Yeah. We've got to mention Marv, as we mentioned it earlier on. I think it was about 2014, Lee, wasn't it, when they started to get the idea together?
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to you, saying people want to get in touch with you about this. And you'd got your doubts, as we all had, I think, that they could make anything of this. But what a monumental success it was, and how it changed Neil's life again. I mean, suddenly, Neil, you're at the BAFTA Awards and things like that. I mean, your feet never touched the ground, did they?
No. It was a great night.
But the whole thing, could you believe how successful it was, Neil?
I can now, because everybody knows me. Yeah.
Who was the most famous person you met? Because you shook a few hands, didn't you?
Prince Edward.
Yeah.
Amy was at the Duke.
The Manager's Awards?
No, Gary Lineker.
Oh, right.
Gary Lineker, yeah. Well, they all know you now, don't they?
Mm.
Oh, and I'm experiencing that as well, Martin, because I've been with them when I've been completely ignored.
Not funny.
Yeah. Euston Station about 2 months ago.
Uh-huh.
We arrive at Euston, get off the train, we're going to a dinner down there, and going down the platform, I can hear some people running down, shouting, there he is. So there's two ladies. One put her bag down and the other one said, oh, I want a picture with you. And the other one went into her bag and picked up the camera and gave it to me and said, could you take a picture of us, please? And I was just about to take the picture and this other woman said, oh, I know you. This is to me now. And she said, you're the other guy in the film. So...
The other guy.
Yeah, I'm the other guy in the film. So things like that have... I'm embarrassed sometimes to be with him because he just knocks me aside. Nobody wants to know me. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know me because my football career in Scotland and World Cup and all that. But He's zoomed past me, and he's just told me driving here that he went to Switzerland about 2 or 3 months ago.
Last year
was it? And getting off the plane, the captain of the plane was standing there and said to him, "Nice to have you aboard, Mr. Marvelous."
But he takes it all in his stride, though, doesn't he? It's never gone to his head, has it? Or has it?
Not really. I'm still the same Neil Baldwin.
But you do order me around a little bit, don't you? You do.
But he remembers all his old friends, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
What
does he do? Does he get that walking stick, Lou, and just give you a nudge?
Yeah. No, he hasn't changed
it. Sir Alex.
Yeah.
When, before he saw...
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably, because it's a football-related film, that's probably the biggest compliment we've both had. When I was on tour with United, Sir Alex joined the tour in America, and he was in the restaurant, saw me, and right away made a beeline across the restaurant to speak to me, and I thought, oh, here we go, there's trouble, because the only time Alex normally does that, there's trouble afoot. But he came over and he said, oh, I've just seen the film, it's absolutely brilliant, best film I've ever seen, tell the big man, which is obviously Neil, tell the big man it was fantastic. And ever since, every time I bump into him, he can't stop talking about Marvellous. And being obviously a football man, football manager, he can see the funny side of it, and he can see the side of it that he's seen that did work, as you've said a couple of times, Martin, it did work, that chemistry was there. So I think when you get the compliment from Sir Alex, and he's not going to mess around and give you a load of garbage. No. He's not going to say something just to please you.
When he did my birthday party.
Yeah. Yeah, I got him to send Neil a DVD for his birthday, and he sent it down to Keel
and a card
and all that. So I think that's that recognition that that we both had is, you know, it's fantastic for both of us. We then realise how successful it's been. And Sir Alex, I told Neil, Sir Alex has seen it 3 times, which is... then I asked Neil how many times he's seen it now, and how many times have you seen it?
80 now.
80. Seen it 80.
80.
80 times, yeah.
All the way through?
Most yeah.
And Martin, ask him how he can watch it 80 times. How can you watch it 80 times?
Because it's a famous film.
And he normally says it's good.
Is there a favourite bit in the film that you always like, Neil?
Oh, yes.
I forgot to ask you about that. There is a scene in there, isn't it, where Toby Jones, the actor, obviously, is wearing how many underpants?
14.
And it's a true story.
It is.
What happened?
It's all true stories, man. It's just been messed around a little bit. And it was Tranmere Rovers versus Stoke at Tranmere. 12 o'clock kickoff. Liverpool at home the same day. And we went there in the dressing room, as you do, and players are getting stripped off. And Martin Carruthers was flashing about this new pair of silk boxer shorts that he'd bought in Kendall's in Manchester. And of course, back then, we're going back to the 90s when most of the players I had in the team, if they were lucky, got £200 a week basic wage. That was probably tops. And I just remarked, how can you afford them? You know, you must be getting something... must be doing something on the side or earning some extra money. Just jokingly in the dressing room. And he then started having a bit of banter with Neil about, let's see your underpants. So I think the lads actually whipped your tracksuit bottom off, didn't they? And you just... And in fairness, he did have these massive pair of underpants on. They weren't silk boxer shorts by any means. So that was the banter for the...
Yeah.
From probably... 45 minutes from kick-off right up until the start of the game, or until they went out the tunnel. And as soon as they went down the tunnel, I says to Neil, get his underpants, because he'd taken a bit of a pasting from them. I said, get your underpants off, get your tracksuit bottom off, and get Carruthers' new silk boxer shorts, get them on. So he put them on, and we were just about to leave the dressing room, so I said, I'll tell you what, get everybody's underpants on. So he went and put everybody's underpants on, so he had the teams and the sub had their underpants on and sat in the back of the dugout, and we were giggling to one another throughout the game, and and he sweats a little bit as well, so I could imagine what's happening. And end of the game came, and complete coincidence, you can check, as Carruthers gets the winning goal. And you know, if you're in a dressing room, the player who gets the winning goal, he's even more cock-a-hoop, so he's in there and laughing and joking. He happened to be first in the bath, first out the bath. And out the bath he came, I'll never forget it. First thing you do is go and put your underpants on, don't you? So he went into his trousers to get his underpants, of course, they're on his, round his backside at the time. And he shouted out, "Some scouse something has nicked my underpants." So all the lads were laughing. But one by one, when they get out the bath, Vince Owens and Cranny and all them, Glegg on, they were going, "Hey, my underpants have gone as well." So they were blaming scouse YTS, people who come in with the tea at half time or whatever. And so I said to Neil, "Get in the toilet now and get your tracksuit bottom off and just walk in with the...
with all these pants on."
With all the pants on. Yeah. And let me tell you, Martin, he was huge. He was big.
Like a giant nappy.
Big man anyway, but he was huge.
Yeah.
So then he came and just stood in the middle of the floor. I'll never forget it. Carruthers says, "My effing underpants better not be next to your backside." And of course, made it even funnier because they were.
Yeah.
And he, one by one, he took the underpants off, threw them up in the air. And of course, he was left standing with the very last pair, which was Martin Carruthers's. And by then, the dressing room, it was in hysterics. Everyone saw the funny side of it.
Except Martin Carruthers.
Not even Martin Carruthers, in fairness.
Because yeah,
I think that was the great thing about the team. They had to respond all the time to things that happened, and they did. So there was a unbelievable team spirit we had, which helps you. That was any football club.
And this fella was huge in that.
He was... Well, I could ask him to do anything, and that was a great thing. He would have done it for me. The loyalty was there. I even tested that loyalty one week. I shouldn't have done, because I knew he was loyal to me. But I made out that I was very, very angry with George...
Andrews.
Yeah.
George Andrews. And that I was banning him from the ground because of something he said on the radio. He hadn't said anything, to be truthful. So he waited for George Andrews to come to pick up his match tickets, unbeknown to me, grabbed them and threw them in the kit room, and then tied them up, and then bound them, gagged them, and at kickoff time, I forget who we were playing.
Port Vale.
So one of the staff comments, put his head round the dugout and says to me, "Boss, George Andrews is bound and gagged in the kit room, shall we let him out?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And it was him, he tied him up and left him in there, and he was supposed to be doing the commentary, obviously. And all because I'd said in the office, "He's barred, I'm going to get him out of here." And he waited for him to pick up his tickets, grabbed them, threw them in. And that was a sign of his loyalty to me.
And John Rudge came past.
Yeah.
He was that very well.
Yeah.
And he was laughing his head off.
I think we all were.
But that Martin, and we've got pictures of it, that was a sign of his loyalty to me. And I never doubted that, but I just wanted to, it was just another wind-up, really.
Lou, Neil, it's been great. We could go on. It's been great reminiscing. And you can see from the two of you how much you enjoyed that period. Great really? Period in your lives.
Mm.
And it's great to see you back together as Neil and the other man.
Thanks, Martin.